So some of our readers never heard of the band and the Red Sun Rising. Could you tell us more about you?
Yeah, the band started in 2008, we're out of Akron, Ohio. We've gone through a lot of member changes over the years, but in the last 5 years, we've kind of developed the band that we've always wanted, which is the band that is today, including this guy, Dave McGeary, with me here on guitar. We've had two independent records, and then we just completed and released our first debut national and now international record, Polyester Zeal.
All right. As you just mentioned, so you released two albums independently. The last one was Making of Kings 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Especially you, because you're there from the beginning. If you would kind of summarize this whole period from recording to release, tour, all this period around the second album, is there one souvenir, something particular that would pop up in your mind?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is when we were recording independently, we had to work around school schedules and work schedules. And with Polyester Zeal, once we got signed, we got to actually record and just do that.
So it means you went professional?
Yeah. So there was nothing... that was the first time we could just focus on music and not have the stresses of a normal day. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And being able to go professional, is that kind of a first step of an incoming dream? Or when you're a professional artist and you have a band, your first idea would be first try to reach enough success to be able to become professional and then try to expand the band. So in your journey through stardom, is that the first step you finally reached after the 5, 6, 7 years of work?
Yeah, that was, getting signed to management first, and then getting signed to a label, and then the label being able to give us the opportunity to make the record. I think that's, it was the first real stepping stone where it felt justified in what we were doing all those years.
And the key to this success was Making of Kings, or it's a long run?
I think
to get interest from label?
Yeah, I think it was more persistence and playing live. Especially in the States, it was more about playing live, because unlike it is here, I feel like they're way more focused on singles. And when you're not able to get on the radio, it's a lot harder. You got to get out and play. So we did years and years of just independent touring ourselves, and that was the only way to really get our name out.
Yeah, but the drawback of such truth about how the North American market works, that at some point you could think, so you would focus to try to write one way or the other singles that could be entered at the Billboard, and not anymore being truth to your artistically what you want to do. So how do you find the balance between, okay, we release what we like and what we are, and at the same time we try to kind of reach or the target for the radio?
I think we more focus on just writing the best song we can, not really necessarily aiming for it to appeal to anyone. We write songs on acoustic guitars from the core, so we focus on the melody and the lyrics, which is what make a great song in our opinion. So we focus there, and then we color it with the band. So I think that's our focus, just to write the best songs we can and not necessarily write for a genre or for someone else.
Okay, so you finally signed with Razor and Tie, and now with deal with in Europe with Spinefarm, I think?
Yeah.
Why them, and did you have like a wide choice to choose from, or they were the most interesting one?
Well, Razor and Tie, I feel like gave us the most attention. They flew out to our hometown of Akron, Ohio, and they watched a show, and you could tell that they wanted us as a project, and they had excitement about us. Where the other labels were kind of like, let's see what they got, kind of thing. Well, maybe we can do this. Razor and Tie was ready to go, and
they felt higher. They showed you a higher level of motivation to sign a band.
Yes.
All right. More trust in you.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Definitely. And they let us make our record without interfering. I mean, they really did.
Okay. Do you still your all the band live in Ohio, or because it might be a cliche, but from Europe, from France, you have the idea that if you want to make money or to be part of the music business in the US, you have to kind of transfer to Los Angeles or New York, to large cities.
Yeah, we actually we still live pretty much in our hometowns. I moved to Chicago, but it wasn't for music.
I don't know if you follow the World Series, but you're a baseball fan.
The Indians, which was my hometown team, was against the Cubs.
So there was
the Cubs lost, the Indians lost.
Which curse will end first?
Yeah, so it was I was a little torn,
right,
for the World Series.
Okay,
but yeah, I mean, but a lot of the guys still live at home in their hometown, and I think it was smart of us not to move to a major city like Los Angeles or New York or Nashville, because you know we could grow that grassroots type of audience that really latch on and you know connect with you. Where Los Angeles and New York, it's like a cesspool of musicians trying to do the same thing, and you can lose that connection and get lost in it.
As you mentioned, major lineup changes in 2015. Any explanation? Any why?
Say that again.
You had a major lineup change.
Oh,
within the band in 2015. Why?
2015. So I think basically who we replaced was our last guitar player with Dave, and it was kind of creative differences, and he's a great player, and we wish him well. But you know, it's just like a band is just like any other relationship, you know.
Because it can be weird from my point of view. You finally reached what you wanted, so you struck a deal with the label, and then the band seems to fall apart.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird. You understand the two opposite trends with the band?
And it was weird timing. But that was basically when we really started touring the most. And I think everyone's true colors came out when we really started touring together.
So are you ready to face being away for months and touring all day long, all week long, or all month long? That was the challenge everybody had to face, to decide, ready to do that or not ready to do that?
And it sometimes just not for everybody.
Right. So now you're kind of the new member. Yes. Can you tell us more about you, where you come from, your musical roots, I would say?
Yeah, I grew up in Pennsylvania, and our current drummer, Pat Jarosi, and I had a band in Charlotte, and that's how we met the guys in Red Sun Rising. So we were doing independent tours for a few years, and after that kind of fell apart, and Pat ended up joining up with, you know, these guys, I moved back to Pennsylvania from North Carolina, and about a year later is when I got the call to see if I was interested in joining the band, and of course I was, and a couple months after that I joined, and it's been about a year now, so.
All right.
And we've been pretty much touring nonstop.
Okay.
So this is a guy that we've known for years.
It's good, I mean, you know if the chemistry will work
exactly. In
the band or not. So now you're touring, you're professional, you're touring all month long, for a long period, away from home. So I suppose that's the kind of thing when you're non-professional, you say, yeah, okay, we'll deal with it. It's what we're looking for,
right,
what we crave for. In retrospect, now you live this life for months. Does that stick to what you imagine, or it's completely different, positively or negatively?
I mean, it brings its new challenges. I mean, especially this first album cycle, when you're really trying to break the band. I mean, with the exception of maybe a month off, it was probably the longest we've ever had consecutively. It was a month off in 2 years. So that's how much we've been touring. And, I mean, we're with each other more than we are with our own family. So that, you know, we have to take care of each other. We have to, if someone's down or if someone needs to go see their family, we got to make arrangements to make that happen, because that's important to keep the band going. And we know at this point it's a crucial point. So you have to look out for each other. And
So let's come back to Polyestosil. What can you tell us about the recording session? Obviously, the label and all the promo kind of focus on the fact that you work with Bob Marlett. But from your insight within the whole recording process, what can you tell us?
The coolest thing about first of all Razor and Ty is that they really did step out and kind of let us make the record with Bob and not really interfere. They didn't try to A&R the record to death. Bob was the same way. He you know, one of the things he told us that made us want to use him is he said, you guys have, you know, all the right materials to make a great record. I just need to show you how to use them. And that's what he did. He made a better version of us. He didn't try to change us. And that's what we liked about Bob. And he created a very comfortable atmosphere and let us just be artists for the first time. And I think that's why the record did as well as it did.
Yeah, but in detail, what's his involvement? Is it just he takes the song you gave him and he tried to make them shine? Or he kind of modifies stuff, co-wrote with you? How involved is he? Because sometimes you have the feeling that some North American producer, they put themselves inside. So they co-wrote, so much change that you're not sure it's really what it looked like at the end, in the beginning. What's the limit?
There was some songs that we wrote in the studio with Bob, and then there was a lot of songs that we brought from our past that he basically just, you know, tweaked to make better. But the majority of the songwriting was, you know, every single lyric was written by Ryan and myself. Bob didn't write any lyrics. You know, melodies, sometimes there would be some melody adjustments Bob would help us with. You know, why don't you try this note instead of going here? And but, you know...
So it's more guidance than...
More guidance, and one of the things he used to say was, I'm going to teach you how to not drive past the exit, which means once you get the idea that works, he knows when to say stop.
Okay. In terms of schedule, how long did you take? How long did you work with him?
So it was 3.5 months out there in Los Angeles.
Right, which is, I suppose, is the kind of investment you could hardly do as independent. It was possible because of Razor and Fire.
Yeah, we could never devote that kind of concentrated time on anything.
And so, one of the first evolution you saw from the past to the situation nowadays with having a strong label is how do you even the investment you can make in one record. That's one of the first differences you can see and enjoy, I would say,
yes.
Being
yes.
part of a large label.
Yeah, I think that was one of the first times it felt real to be a, just, you know, when I could say, like, wow, I'm a musician now.
Okay. So, obviously, Police Steel is released, but was released in a few weeks here, so a year after its North American release.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, a year after, how do you see this record? Would you kind of... retrospect change a lot of things or keep it the way it is? Or
I think it's a great first record to introduce us to the world. I think the songs have already evolved live. Like, if you listen to the record and then go see us live, I think you'll see a lot of evolutions in the songs themselves. And the songwriting moving forward, I think that we've evolved from that. So the next record will be different. But it will still sound like us. Over a year and playing those songs constantly and trying to tweak the live set to keep it interesting for not only for our fans but for ourselves too. We got to play them every night. The songs have evolved and they have changed a bit.
Okay, talking about new album, do you have already stuff?
We have a lot of material. Yeah, always writing.
So once again, in terms of schedule, you're touring a lot. You're coming back to the U.S. You're retouring before Christmas, then you stop, and then you restart in January.
Yeah.
When do you think you will then come back home, rest, I suppose, for a few weeks or months, and then start to work on the?
I think the January February tour will be the last actual tour. We might do some festivals in the summer, but that'll be the last actual tour, and then the rest of the time in 2017 will be devoted to writing and recording the record.
All right. So with this record in the U.S., once again, you had already two hits enter the Billboard. Mm-hmm. So it's The Other Side and Emotionless. I suppose it's the first time it happened to you, to the band.
Yeah,
you.
Absolutely.
How does it feel? I mean, from the inside.
It's funny because it didn't really feel like anything because we were playing shows every single night. You know, so we were just focusing on the shows, and the one thing we did notice is, you know, more people coming to shows and more people singing the song back. Mm-hmm. You know, each time we released a new song, we noticed that more people in the crowd sang that song back. But that's really the only thing we noticed from the inside, because we just kept working every day, you know, so we didn't have time to sit back and even really enjoy it. We just had to keep pushing forward. So,
I think when we got a little bit of time off to just go home and kind of disconnect ourselves from each other, then we really got to, you know, that almost outsider point of view to be like, wait, we have two number one songs, and that's amazing. Because when you're in the grind, you're going,
you don't feel it.
And I don't know, once again, it's a bit cliche, but at the North American release of the new album, did you kind of, the first morning you went to the shop to see if it was in the shelf?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's not completely cliche, that's the kind of stuff you want
to
do.
Yeah, you have to do, you're trying to do that here.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
That's kind of a pinch me moment.
Did you find it?
We didn't get to a record store, but
this is maybe it's a small.
We're gonna take a look around.
You have to go to the large ones. In the Champs-Élysées, for example, I'm sure they find it. Spine Farm is pretty big in terms of the distribution.
Very cool.
In Europe. Okay, so just some cliches are not completely.
Yeah, we love it.
Imagine I would like to. Describe the sound of the band through your influences, musical influences.
Okay.
Where you come from. What would be these influences? From someone who never heard of the band.
I think on the surface you would hear grunge, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains. But if you dig deeper and you hear some of the harmonies. And the melodies in there, I think, you know, you would hear some of the Beatles influences we had, and some of the even R&B or like Otis Redding's kind of stuff, and soulfulness and Queen. So there's some hidden notes in there, but I think on the surface, if you had to just quickly listen to the bits of the band, you would hear the grunge influence the strongest.
All right. So. Good. So you're touring in Europe. Is that the first time you tour in Europe?
Yeah.
Or even you're in Europe?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So far, so good.
So this is like, yeah, this is all fascinating.
So you're in Paris, right? Good.
It's your third day.
Good. So two days in London, one in Paris.
Yeah.
Good. So two nice cities,
I would say. Yeah, absolutely.
So you're on tour with Skillet. What can we expect from your show in the Élysée Montmartre, so in 2 days? First of all, good thing, it's a sold-out show.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you're not the front runner, but
right.
you're also part of the package, I would say. What can the audience expect from the show, and you, what are your expectations towards the French audience?
Well, I mean, we've heard amazing things about European audiences anyway, so we're excited to feel that energy, and it's just exciting being here in general. But I think from us, you can expect, we always put everything into our show. I know that sounds cliche, but it's high energy and it's real. I mean, we don't run tracks. We do all our harmonies live. Everything you see on stage is making sound from us. So,
what can you expect? 45 minutes, 1 hour set?
I think it's 35 on this tour.
35.
So probably 6 songs.
All right. Was it difficult to?
It was
to find the set.
Especially the first time we're out here, we're like, man, we want to play this song.
Yeah.
I suppose we will focus on the last one, but do you have bits and pieces from the two previous album, or it's only focusing?
No,
on
it's the, really focused on this album right now. When we start headlining back in the. You know, when we come, hopefully next time we come back here, we can at least headline some clubs or something.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Then you would get a longer set, and you'd probably hear some stuff in the past.
All right. So you shot already different video clips for the new album, The Other Side, Emotionless, Amnesia. In general, do you kind of like this exercise, or it's kind of a necessary pain? First question. And second question, was it as fun to watch than to do the Amnesia?
Well, to answer the first question, I think it is important to keep changing it up and to keep your fans on their toes and to broaden the band and to show the different sides of the band, because we don't want to be one-sided, we don't want to be one genre. We just want to write music and we want to entertain. We want to be more than just a band. We want to entertain people and have them feel that connection with us. But yes, the Amnesia video was a blast to make, and we were pretty much laughing hysterically the whole time.
I think we had more fun than anybody else on the set.
Yeah.
and even the when you shot the video clip, you're doing the same thing over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
Which can be a pain of it. If you reach like the 30th time, you have to do the same riff, the same thing.
Well, the funny thing about that video is every half hour we got to change outfits.
Yeah,
so
sure.
It, so yeah. It you fun the whole time.
It was a long day.
And what was the whole process before, for example, Amnesia? The idea come from you or come from the director? How did you put together this idea of like an old school 70s,
80s? It was definitely a tip of the hat to one of me and Ryan, especially his favorite comedians, and the band likes him too, Tim and Eric. And they have a show, and it's very similar to the vibe of that. And I when I was looking for directors, I said, you know, I really like the vibe of this guy's show. It's like shot old, and can we do something like this? And it's quirky and it's weird, and I'd love to have the band members kind of act in it. And that was the first time the band members got to kind of be characters.
Yeah.
And between once the director got a rough idea, then the band kind of made each character individual. So you really get to see each one's personality come out in the video.
So I mean, the good thing is that we can see that you're a rock band, but you don't take that seriously. I mean, for so it's good. I mean, on yourself. I mean, but also you have the riff saying, okay, we would look so ridiculous that you might, you know, kind of downgrade our image one way or the other. Did that stuck your mind? We didn't care. I mean,
no.
You get the idea, the spirit, or you don't get it.
Yeah, exactly. If someone doesn't get it, then I guess you don't really need to be around. So.
All right. One thing which is very important for me is the cover artwork.
Yeah.
Very different one to the other. If you take the two last albums, this one is pretty weird.
Yeah.
What was the idea when you decided for this record, and how in general do you work with the cover artist?
We work with the. With the artist a lot. He's in a lot of our t-shirts and merchandise. His name's Douglas Granger, and he's a local artist in Akron, Ohio, where we're from. And the street that you see in the album is downtown Akron, where we're from. The man pushing the cart is a character we created to represent polyester zeal. He's pushing the cart full of nonsense statues and, you know,
Mona Lisa
things. And
you can see it if you want.
Yeah.
Real.
So it's, but he's pushing, you know, fake objects that make him feel, you know, that make him happy, even though he's homeless and they can really do nothing for him. He's going to push that card every day because it makes him happy. But there's also a lot of inside jokes that were drawn in into the album cover, so it's kind of fun to look through and see what you can find.
So it's a discussion between you and the artist, and you're switching back and forth ideas and try to implement, yes, it works, no, it doesn't work.
Right, yeah, pretty much. I mean, we went through a couple drafts that were way off of what I was
thinking. It was very different from the previous one, where you had this kind of Greek Greek statue with some yellow painting on it.
Yeah.
Which was, so in the spirit of both covers are very different from one from each other.
Yeah. Man, I haven't thought about the Making Kings record in a while. It's crazy that you guys are asking me about that. It's cool.
I mean, but it's also the fact that, I mean, you switch completely to one dimension to the other. I mean, you reach a new level. So, I understand it's part of your past, but you're not focusing on that anymore. You're focusing on the present and the future.
Right.
So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose you're so proud of the two records.
Oh, absolutely.
One way or the other, do you have plans to release them?
I would love to.
Yeah.
I think that whole record done properly, and I say that because we didn't have the budget to sonically make it sound like it should. It doesn't represent the way we hear it in our heads.
All right. A question that might sound strange, but I found on your website, if I'm not wrong, you're selling your record for $10.
Yeah.
Which, from our point of view, sounds nothing. Yeah. Your record will be 15 or 18 euros.
I wish it was like that over there.
All right. Are you especially cheap, or is that the price of an album in the US?
That's, for the most part, that's the price of an album in the US. Unless you're
supposed to make money, if I'm living based on that, if you're not selling millions of,
we always look at it as that the music itself doesn't make the money anymore. It's the experience of coming to a show and buying physical merchandise, and but you're paying for the experience, not so much the music. Because most people stream it now. I mean, so it's like to charge that much, especially in the U.S. when they're really concentrated on, like I said, singles. You know, here I feel like people here still want an album. They want to hear what a band has to offer.
And the object is important for us.
Yeah. So
the vinyl even version.
Oh, the vinyls are cool. Those are kind of a trend. So.
Might be hip.
They have some appeal to them. So yeah, you can all charge right. a little more for those.
Last question after that short quiz to have mm-hmm. better understanding of your tastes in music. From Ohio, how do you see the American rock metal scene?
In Ohio?
No, from your point of view.
From our point of view.
Yeah. What's your understanding of how it works in the overseas?
Like how it's doing, how it's doing over here.
No, in the U.S.
Oh, in the U.S.
What's your view on your own national?
I see. I think it was down for many years, and it still is, as far as just not being as popular. But it's growing, and part of the reason is honestly is there was, I feel like a lot of bands were using the same producers and the same songwriters, and naturally a lot of the rock bands started sounding the same. I mean, how would they not? You know, that's why we refuse to use outside writers. I don't know if it'll ever get that way. I don't ever want that to happen. But we saw a lot of that, and I think the radio got a little stale, and that turned a lot of people off. However, there's been a lot of new just rock festivals that have popped up over the last 10 years. And there's one promoter in particular, Danny Rimmer. I always give him credit because he's done a lot for it. And there's a huge rock festival circuit now that wasn't there 10 years ago, and I think that's really promoting live rock music again. So I think it's on the upswing.
Yes, because you have the feeling, once again, from my point of view, on the other side of the Atlantic, that you have huge bands, the stars of the system. You have small ones, but difficult to reach, even just to be able to reach a wider audience. And in between, you have no medium ones.
Yeah.
Small or huge, but yeah, there's nothing in between.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
We were just talking about that yesterday. Yeah. It's like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
You should have a medium step, and then maybe go to the stars or not. But and so last, a few questions on your musical taste. Is there a song you would take in a deserted island? Imagine you're stuck somewhere, you have just one song.
Wow.
What would it be? Let's say your favorite song ever. In other words.
On an island? Oh, that's a tough one.
Oh, man, I don't even know.
I can go to an album, your favorite album.
Okay. That'd be tough for me, too. I mean, I guess one of my favorite albums, honestly, that I would say that really inspired me to write music is probably Tool's Enema. I don't know. It's not like a classic album, but it's an album that really inspired me to write music.
I'll take Nirvana's Nevermind.
All right.
So that's my go-to.
Tricky question. The least favorite song of the band?
That we have?
That you recorded.
I'd say Awake.
On this album?
Yeah.
On this album, on the two others? I cannot ask you that, but yeah. one you would not like to play live, or the one that you don't think catch the... or was better in the idea, or in the rehearsing room than in reality?
On this record, I would say Awake.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I would say there's a song called Moving On from Amazing Kings, and it just sticks out like a sore thumb. It's like very just like rock and roll, and the rest of the record's a little more vibey and darker, and that song just sticks out. It's like, I don't know why we put it on that record.
Right.
I have no answer for it. I like the whole album, so.
Good.
Yeah.
First rock album you ever bought?
First rock album?
Maybe not rock, but...
I would say full album had to have been probably Toys in the Attic by Aerosmith, because my parents had it in the house.
Alright.
Rock album, I think, was Reload by Metallica.
Mm-hmm. Last question. Imagine for the next record, you have your choice of guests. One guest, dead or alive. Who will it be?
Let's say Chris Cornell or Maynard Keenan. Mm-hmm.
Kurt Cobain.
Dead or alive, it's fine.
Yeah.
Kurt Cobain is
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Appreciate it. Those were awesome questions.